In this episode, we'll talk about what's going on at Facebook and what I'm calling El Beso de la Muerte,
the kiss of death.
Discover how video can help you achieve your sales and marketing goals. It all starts right here in Todd Hartley's Video Marketing Mastery. Brought to you by Wirebuzz.
Heyo, what is up? All right, lots going on in digital marketing. It's been a fun day here at the office. Today's actually my birthday, and friends and family have just been randomly stopping in. I would think it would be terribly annoying if it wasn't so sweet of them to do it. But my sister dropped in with some gifts from my nieces and nephews, for Uncle Todd. My sister told my niece and nephew that it was my 50th birthday, which is not true. And all my cards say happy 50th. And some friends dropped some wine. And my wife and I, it's a Friday, are going to be jumping in the car around 1 o'clock today after my last client call. We're going to go up north to Flagstaff, and we are going to drop out for a weekend at a friend's house up there and make some great steaks tonight and just enjoy life. And if you want next year's digital business insights today, well, you've tuned into the right podcast. In the last episode, 140, HubSpot rock star Dan Tyer called me the original smarketer, which is a mashup of smart sales and marketing person. Yes, yes, I'm a smarketer, have been, and for the last 20 years, I've consistently been at least 3 years ahead of the online marketing curve because I do a ton of homework. I see market trends that develop very quickly, and I've got a very clear idea where things are going. And as a listener of this podcast, it is my goal to always make sure that you see the road developing long before competitors, right? That's part of the unique value that I'm going to bring for you right here at the intersection where sales and digital marketing and video creation live. And that's my environment. It is where I call home. And over a year ago on this podcast, I first introduced you to what I call El Beso de la Muerte, the kiss of death. And I used it in reference to a business decision, a tactical business move that I saw Facebook make. Now, plus, I vividly remember telling you that I would put a reminder in my calendar. And a year later, we'd find out if I'm crazy or not, right? Because look, what fun is it if you're not going to throw out a prediction? If you're not going to tell, why tell people where the road's going if you're not going to circle back and say, did that even work? And I'm just taking educated guess, right? I'm looking to see where things are developing, and I'm doing my very best. But in episode 52, I mentioned how Facebook's new censorship policy was going to hurt their business, and I called it
El Beso de la Muerte, the kiss of death,
which I absolutely love saying. And I said, let's look at Facebook's business and let's look a year from now because I have a feeling it's not going to be pretty. And I mentioned Facebook's stock price and said, let's check in a year later to see how healthy Facebook is. Well, a year ago, the Facebook stock was $137 a share. It was a year ago. And now their stock is $187 a share. But stocks really aren't my thing, right? You don't listen to me for stock advice. I've never had a job working in the stock market. I have very little insight. But what I do have is a very personal, intimate feel for the natural laws of online universes, right? And how to harness the natural force that plays out time and again in front of audiences for businesses. So intuitively, I just knew something wasn't right in Menlo Park, California. It just wasn't feeling right to me. And as the Zucklings at Facebook decided to censor news and act as their user's bigger brother, nobody likes Big Brother, telling their customers what is approved and what isn't approved as a news source. And every time in history, some organization, some leader, some pop culture figure, an actor, an artist, a musician, a religious figure, tried to tell people what is approved and what is not approved, every single time the natural laws always play out the same way. The people that are told what is and what isn't approved, what they get is irritation, resentment, frustration, and then eventually they stand up and overrule. It happens all the time. And if you don't believe me, how did you react when you were a kid and your parents said, you're not allowed to hang out with that kid? That kid's trouble, right? It made you want to be around them more. You can't wear that outfit, not in public. You're not allowed out of the house in that outfit. What did you want to do? Pack that outfit into your bag, right? And go out of the house in the pre-approved outfit and then change when you get to your friend's house. I don't want you listening to that music, not that artist. That's the wrong thing. And then you just needed it even more. And last night I was explaining this to my wife as we were on our nightly walk with our dog, Happy Hartley. And you know what she did? I'm holding the leash. And she told me not to let the dog sniff that long in the gravel. And what happened inside my head is defined as, well, resentment. It's just a basic human instinct. And when a large group of people start resenting an authority, eventually that group of people just rise up and overrule them. It doesn't matter the genre or the place or what time in history. It's happened at the Boston Tea Party. It's kids in my parents' generation that were told not to listen to Elvis. Look at the way he moves his hips. The way Elvis swings his hips, it's inappropriate. It's obscene. You can't listen to him. And we hear it with video games are going to make you violent and don't take drugs and you shouldn't have alcohol. And when you try to ban things, a stronger opposite force gets built and comes right back. It's that whole equal and opposite reaction, except the reaction is stronger because it's got resentment in there. Don't you tell me what I can't do. I first learned this online because for years in the early 20s, my breaking news site, which went crazy viral, and I've shared about it over, you know, in the podcast about my news site and how that site built my entire career. The site was generating 36 million visitors a year on zero advertising dollars. I did it all through digital marketing savvy, through search engine optimization and content marketing, dominating Google and news engines and RSS feeds and controlling all of the big searchable key phrases that my audience was routinely looking for, exactly what you would advise people today if they were trying to be a thought leader in a space, right? And I was doing this almost, 20 years ago. And sometime in the mid to late 2000s, something drastic happened. You know, I didn't believe in censoring my audience. In fact, I didn't censor anybody except if you physically threatened somebody else, right? Your free speech ends when your fist hits the next person's nose. And I'm like this weird dude. I'm like this weird person in today's world where I'm much more comfortable being around people that have opposing thoughts. If I'm around people that have the same thoughts as me, well, that's terribly uncomfortable. I want to learn, grow, and I need to be challenged in order to do that. But eventually my audience grew so large that I couldn't manage the infighting that was taking place. And each and every day, it kept happening. You know, I had a huge online membership. And because I believe in supporting your right of free speech, especially if you disagree with me, I didn't censor that audience. And it never worked for me. And each and every day, that problem of the audience, which it may not be a problem. I may have defined the problem wrong. But eventually, in like year 7 or 8, I caved in thinking I was doing the right thing. You know, there are people smarter than me that kept saying, dude, you should really start banning and start censoring. And and help clean up your website. I've just never been that guy. So I instantly thought that these people knew better than me. So I started a 3 strikes and you're out policy. And eventually people started questioning every decision that I was making. And if I banned someone, they would come back under another name or another IP address if I shut that down. And then they became a martyred folk hero to the audience, to the members of my site. They would thumb their nose at me and at the system, and they'd find folly at my decisions. And if they disagreed with my decision, they would write a lengthy manifesto paper analyzing every piece of my ruling. Or if a supporter of theirs saw it differently, they'd start a conspiracy theory about how I don't like their thoughts or how I'm intimidated by their, you know, I'm hiding something. And so, you know, and all these thoughts start developing, and before you know it, it grows way out of control, and others start picking up on it behind the scenes, and theories got so bad that some people would make baseless claims against me, really wild and crazy stuff. How 10 years later, I can't even remember them, but it was nonstop, and it was all happening in my name, which made me very uncomfortable. And I've had hate mail before, you know, when I was on the radio. Getting hate mail is part of the job. But I'm not immune to it. I'm just not. I'm not immune to hate being thrown my way. I might be a little callous to it, but not immune. And I do remember people calling me racist because I banned someone who was threatening to beat up somebody who was in favor of open borders. No, somebody was in favor of closed borders. So I banned somebody that was in favor of closed borders, which meant that I must be a closed border supporter, so I'm a racist. And, you know, I'm not thin-skinned, so being called a racist normally wouldn't be a problem for me. But there was a time when it became the straw that broke the camel's back. And at this time, it really pissed me off because, I don't know, you may not know this about me, but I have a mixed-race family. I have 4 black brothers and sisters. My parents, at 65 years of age, adopted 2 kids from Haiti. This is some 10 years ago. And race-based political arguments, they just, you know, without facts, they just make me, it makes me sick. It eats away at a family that I have. It eats away at people making smart decisions. And before I knew it, my censorship decision made some small portion of my audience resent me and consider me an authoritarian. And I know better, just like an I know better than you policy, right? And that's how they started looking at me. And at least that's how a portion of my audience saw my decisions. And they started resenting me. And before I knew it, I didn't want to even be there anymore. And even though I had a very large audience, over 36 million visitors a year, I just shut down the entire site at like 5 a.m. without explanation, right before I left to go on a cross-country business trip advising businesses on their digital strategy, El Beso de la Muerte. The kiss of death. And when I see it, I know the negative undercurrent backlash that it creates. And then this week, I saw Edison Research and Triton Digital Infinite Dial study that came out, which looks at how Americans use social media. And for the first time ever, usage of Facebook went down. Stock goes up for now, but usage is going down. And this drop is seen in every age and gender demographic as well. And it's not as if only young people or older people or women or men are using Facebook less. It's not black people or white people or Hispanics or Jews. Every study group is using Facebook less. And if you want to know the reason, good friend of the podcast, Jay Baer, also a University of Arizona alum, who's been bearing down through his career, and I've really enjoyed watching him over the years, released this week. And he goes on to say, why after a decade did Facebook finally see a reduction in usage in the United States? I believe there are 3 explanations. These are Jay Baer's explanation. Increased distrust in Facebook. He says, it hasn't been a great year for Facebook as an organization. The mainstream media has consistently covered Facebook's role or at least complicity, in the world of fake news. And when you combine that with the company's other missteps in other areas of privacy and accountability, you end up with an environment where the users of the platform may not fully trust the motives and judgments of those operating the platform. Given that Facebook has access to many of our most important personal data points, photos, and feelings, a drop in trust could create a drop in usage, you think? Number two, increased discord on Facebook. If you're a Facebook user, I'm sure you've seen this in your own newsfeed. Someone who says they are logging off on Facebook for good because of the rampant negative presence that takes place on that platform. And in the shadow of the presidential election, there has been continued polarization of thought in America and an acceptance that the new normal is a climate of us v. them. And this is tiring. Each time you express an opinion on Facebook, you must defend that opinion from segments of your friends. This squeezes out the fun of Facebook, just like Fergie squeezed out proprietary vibe on the national anthem, right? And the number three is increased disinterest in Facebook. Jay Baer goes on to say, indeed, I believe reduced trust in Facebook, in their overlords, along with the reduced willingness to argue amongst ourselves on Facebook, continues to this first ever reduction in the usage of Facebook. Look, all of this is exactly what I've been talking about and what I tipped you off a year ago when I saw the initial signs of distrust, discord, and disinterest. And as Jay Baer says, these are the three reasons of Facebook's decline in usage. If you want to get Jay Baer's full article, and I just took little excerpts, you could go to the show notes page for this episode where I keep all of the news and information, and you can get access to it at wirebuzz.com/141. But it is important that I let you know that Jay Baer's site is convinceandconvert.com. Convince and Convert. From a marketing perspective, that is my favorite URL of any agency or company that's advising clients to speed up their sales process. Good on you, Jay Baer. Thank you, Jay Baer, for always providing smart tactical information and for being ahead of the curve. Also in marketing land, YouTube is limiting the amount of data it shows creators, and going forward, creators can no longer filter viewer demographics by translation use or YouTube products. Now, also demographic data will no longer be available for private or unlisted videos and some video channels. Now, I'm totally fine with that. You know, I think that's a great decision. We use private YouTube channels here at Wirebuzz to help us manage our clients' private and unlisted rough cuts. Before they're out, pushed out into the public, we have a Wirebuzz rough cut channel that never sees the light of day. And that is just used for us to be able to upload and handle our clients' rounds of revisions. And the reason we chose to do that is we wanted to not tamper with the Wirebuzz channel's results that our video metrics would get, what our watch time would be looking like. And we know that these videos that our clients are going to review, if it was on our own channel, our live channel, that type of audience metric feedback, which would be very small because it's intended for very limited views, 1, 2, 3 times, would damage our overall YouTube channel. To talk about how the production team uses the Wirebuzz Rough Cut channel, which is the private unlisted one that we have, I'm joined right now by Wirebuzz Director of Production, Dale Krupla. What is up?
What is up, Todd?
Dale, you guys use that Wirebuzz Rough Cut channel religiously.
Daily.
Right? Tell me how you guys do it.
Well, in Premiere, we will export a video at 1920 to 1080, which is very YouTube friendly. And we will export that cut out of Adobe Premiere. We are a Creative Cloud organization, and we will upload it to YouTube. We have a preset on our YouTube settings to ensure that everything is already private. We've made it kind of dummy-proof in the process to protect our clients and the long days at the office. So
all of our client videos are very sensitive information.
Absolutely.
Our clients deal in highly regulated industries, mm-hmm. and anything that is a rough cut, is not ready for primetime. How do you prepare that video? There's actually like an open close disclaimer that we put on. Talk to us about that.
So we just, before we, you know, I'm really big on managing expectations, as is Wirebuzz. And when you see a disclaimer at the front of it that says, this is not the final product, it just puts your brain in the right state of mind. You know, we're not sharing something that's going to win an Oscar here. We're sending something that is the beginning of our collaboration in the post-production process with our client.
Look, we've had plenty of times where there's a miscommunication between our direct contact at our client's office and their supervisor or the CEO. Mm-hmm. And when they see it on YouTube, if it doesn't have that disclaimer, in their mind, they think YouTube's only a public platform. So the CEO could be thinking, oh my God, you guys have already pushed this video out and I haven't approved it yet. So that disclaimer helps, what is the acronym? CYA?
Cover your acronym?
Acronym. And it works perfectly that way.
Absolutely. And I mean, at Wirebuzz, we have the level of quality where we would like our roughs to be at a place where they are almost to the final. You know, Todd and I really beat the drum of pre-production, and everything kind of comes together in that first rough cut that we send off.
Yeah, we say that that rough cut's going to be roughly 90% of the way there.
Absolutely.
It's going to have lower thirds. They're all going to be spelled right. We're going to have the appropriate title.
There's going to be some watermarks on the music.
Right.
Just to make sure the right music was selected. Absolutely.
And because we do so many revisions, oh, by the way, on each one of our projects, we've already priced in 3 rounds of revisions.
That's right.
So our clients at this point know that we're going to go through an iterative process. And only when they are ready for it to go live and only when it's ready for prime time will the disclaimers be removed. Will that video be placed in the proper channel, which most of the time is their YouTube channel or Wistia or some type of hosting platform that they're using or we're recommending. Could be Vidyard. And before you know it, we've uploaded it and they're off to the races.
Yeah, we find a lot of our clients use Dropbox for our finals. And,
oh, is that right?
That's right. It's for our money and theirs most of the time. It's the safest, most secure, and we upload and they download and the quality is all there.
And that's out of our Dropbox account.
Or theirs.
Or theirs.
It depends, absolutely.
Okay. Now, so for the interest of full disclosure, I think it's really transparent to the entire audience that mm-hmm. I'm not involved in that last step because I had no clue. I was like, oh, what? That's right?
No. I mean, but that's why we're here. We're here to help.
Right? Make me look smart.
That's right.
Hey, Dale, speaking of smart, we filmed a television commercial this week. While you're in studio, without mentioning the client, can we just talk about the scene that you and your team did pre-pro on and then went out on location and executed and how that went?
Sure, it was a fantastic shoot. I mean, I would fail the organization to also mention we had a simultaneous shoot going on in London,
which was
super exciting. You're for right. us. Don't forget the most. Not only are we shooting a commercial that day, we're also across the pond, as they say. But it was a really great opportunity for the company to shoot something truly creative. So we got to be creative with the direct-to-consumer medical client, and we wanted to communicate a sense of security and a sense of surprise at the diagnosis, but also a sense of hope at the end of the video. And the environment that we chose to shoot that in was in a dance studio, and the couple was a little bit later in their life. And through our shot process and really getting the opportunity to be creative through that, through the way that we framed the shots and the way that we shot the things, we were able to communicate within 15 seconds now, folks, through music and storytelling and knowing all of that beforehand before we get to the shots, the sense of isolation and surprise, but then also a sense of hope all within 15 to 30 seconds.
And I've already seen the footage. It's
really
stunning.
Pretty. It's very pretty.
Right?
Yeah.
You should be very proud of yourself.
That was a very good shoot. Thank you.
Now, it's important you also know that while right before we started recording this portion of the podcast episode, Dale has before him my script that I'm using for the explainer video of the for Wirebuzz's new explainer video that's going on our homepage. By the way, our explainer video is about 2.5 years old. And if your industry is settled, mine's the Wild West. But if your industry is settled, you might get 3-5 years out of that video. Ours is so rapidly evolving, and we're moving at warp speed way ahead that we wanted to do a minor upgrade to our story. So when you see it and it eventually goes live, and it should be live in just a couple of weeks, you're going to notice the script starts off something like this. This is me reading what will sound like a really great VO, but I'm going to give you two sentences. So when you see that new video, you'll go, oh yeah, that's the one they were talking about, right? Wirebuzz is so much more than a video production company. We're actually a digital marketing agency that uses video to achieve your sales and marketing goals. Because we know you don't care about videos. You really care about the results, whether it's generating traffic, leads, growing your social presence, or boosting sales. So Dale came into the studio here, and what did we do? We broke down what is the storyboard, and then applied what our shots are that we want to tell that script story.
Absolutely. That was just it. It was a shot-by-shot creative collaboration between Todd and myself. What we're looking for, the corresponding shots, B-roll, you know, to go over the script.
And then next week, we're going to have the whole team. We've already asked people to dress business casual. Is that what you said?
Yeah,
business.
Just come looking correct, as the kids say.
Come looking correct. Because we're in Arizona, and if nobody's coming into our office, our theory is, look, it's often going to be very hot, so feel free to be comfortable. Wear shorts, and you could wear flip-flops, but if we're having clients, guests, or a B-roll shoot, come looking correct.
That's right.
All right. So Dale's been, and I detailed those shots out. Dale, thanks so much for checking in with me for a few moments.
Of course.
Thanks for organizing the shoot here this week for the commercial. And on the same day, the one in London, that footage is looking stunning as well.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Thanks so much for joining us. And so if you're trying to grow an audience, you can't censor an audience. That is just them rules, right? You know that, and I know that. If you want to nurture and grow, the last thing you want to do is tell people what's good and what is bad. Nobody likes a nanny society, right? I know I don't. And when I start to feel like I'm in a nanny environment, I start to resist. And when I start to resist, I start to look elsewhere. And it's important that I tell you, from a marketing perspective, this is not Todd telling you that you should be taking your advertising dollars and go elsewhere. I'm not saying that, okay? That's premature. That's down the road. That's years away. And I'm also not saying that Facebook is the next MySpace. It might be. Who knows? A little early to say that. But I want you to know that Facebook is still the greatest ad platform the world has ever seen. There's very smart tactical ways for you to use your video and your marketing strategies to get in front of a very specific target audience, to introduce them to your video, to tease them to go to a landing page where you can convert them to a customer or get them to buy online. And the whole goal is to tell you that there's some trouble in River City or Menlo Park, and that the Zucklings have sided with authoritarianism, and that never turns out well, okay? Just be aware of that. I know people are always advising other people with other people's money to start censoring, to start banning, and the net result of that doesn't look pretty. And Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Google are all in the same boat right now. If you can go back to episode 52, you'll see that I've got an article here called What Fake News Means for Google and Facebook. It's from a year ago. I highly recommend you go back and listen to episode 52. And the reason is I tell you that fake news, from my perspective, from a guy who used to work for 8 years for Clear Channel Communications as a digital marketing guru, but also 4 of those years as an on-location reporter that would cover the biggest events then happening in national news, like presidential debates. Yep, I was there. Presidential recounts in Florida when they're hanging dimpled chads and everybody's down there counting them to find out if Bush or Gore is going to win. I was there, and at presidential inaugurations. So start thinking about what really is fake news, and I break down my stories for you and tell you the real big details about fake news and how it always has existed. And now it's a whole different story. It's been weaponized, and you need to know about it. So I talk about that on that page, and I'm specifically laying out the details about Google, Facebook, and what I like to call
El Beso de la Muerte, the kiss of death.
All right. So that's a big summary there. If you want to know how to guarantee that your videos generate an ROI, a return on investment, well, I think that's all we should be focused on as marketers. How do we convince and convert? And how do we pull people through a buyer's journey and get them to buy at faster rates? And how do we use the most powerful, most persuasive tool on the internet, which is video and will always be video? How do we use that to get people to buy at faster rates? Well, the real trick is it all lives within my 5-part web-based mini course that's on the website. It is free to the listeners of this podcast. It is my gift to the community. And it will teach you all of my secrets to making sure that your videos guarantee an ROI, which is ultimately the question that everybody's big boss is going to ask before they approve a video budget. And if you want to get access, just go to wirebuzz.com/ROI. All right. Look, lots going on around here. I'm going to continue to bring you behind the scenes. In the next episode, I'm going to talk to you about a major university, one of the top universities in the world. That was here at Wirebuzz, and we broke down a strategy for them, and I'm going to give you that strategy for free right here on the next episode, 142. And if this podcast episode was valuable to you, go up to iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, pound on that subscribe button, and each and every episode will get sent directly to your mobile device, right? And make sure you share this podcast with a friend, a colleague, a family member, anybody that you're rooting for. They should know what's happening in the landscape of digital marketing. And you can't know what's going on in digital marketing without understanding the big power plays that are happening on all of the dominant marketing platforms. And I want to make sure that I tip you off. And this is where you'll go when you need to get next year's digital marketing news today, so you can be properly positioned down the road. All right. Peace out. Peace out. Thank you so much for joining. Remember, episode 142, big news. I'm going to tell you about that big strategy. I'm also going to bring you out some news from YouTube that'll be useful to you. And it's coming up in the next episode. All right. Drop the music. Get me out of here. And I look forward to talking with you in the very next episode of Video Marketing Mastering.